All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, November 9th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and DraftKings. Head over to the site, free three-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL, NBA, MLB. Thank God that season's over, but when it starts around again, it'll be all be covered under one subscription package. You're all set to go. So just free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after. You're all set. Buddy, big news in my house. I got my sneakers back.
Thank God.
I can't remember if we talked about that on this podcast
or was it
the NBA. I can't remember, but yeah, so got my sneakers back after some stranger wore my sneakers home from a party, and I was able to get them back. So I'm reunited.
Sounds like an insane party, by the way. Was it just insane?
Yeah, it was crazy, dude. It was just like a really old guy, really old. If you didn't listen to that one, my friend's wife's father just wore my shoes home, just thinking they were his. And yeah, so the party was pretty out of hand when another person walks off with your clothing. All right, week 10 cash plays. We're going to break them down today. Go over and check out. We also posted a No Halftime Takeover podcast today where we talked all about no halftime challenges for that great DFS app, one of our great sponsors as well. So check that out where we kind of break down different strategies that you can take on no halftime as a nice I look at no halftime. It's a nice hedge against the general grind of DFS lineup making because you're just able to just take those one-on-one challenges. So check that out. That is in the feed as well. Here, we're going to take a look at some of the cash game plays for week 10, which sometimes these things change from the time of post till now. Today's Thursday morning, and there's a lot of things that always change between now and Sunday morning, and I focus the picks mostly on the main slate. But as of right now, it looks like there's not a ton of injury news and notes out there. So I think that we are going to be looking at this list of guys in terms of when we ultimately make up our lineups. I don't think it's going to deviate too much from this list. I know you looked at the article and you looked at the couple of names that I wrote a quarterback here, and it was call this list uninspiring, downright awful. Like, I don't know what it's not good for sure, but
I'm going with nauseating. Nauseating is kind of the initial feeling I had when I looked at it. It's pretty damn grim.
Well, I think just quarterback in general is difficult this week because you have a couple guys who, guys that we've played in the past, right? Deshaun Watson hurt. Russell Wilson playing Thursday night. I'm trying to think of some other guys that we played. I guess Dak is a guy. He's interesting, but he's expensive. You're getting...
And Brady's going against Denver.
Right, exactly. You're getting the top end of the salary scale in terms of just most expensive guys. You're getting an all-time highest price ever on Dak at $8,800 this week. I think that's probably a bridge too far in terms of price. And again, it's so hard to evaluate this without Ezekiel Elliott, like what they end up doing. Like, do they just lean on more? And we don't even know if he's playing or not yet. So the uncertainty around Dak, like scheme, if they don't have Elliott / the incredibly high price, even in Atlanta, has me a little wary on that. Brady, $8,500 against Denver, no thanks. Breeze, I mean, on the road in Buffalo at $8,500, no thanks. I mean, so the very expensive guys, I just really couldn't find – I just couldn't make a case for them, right? Like, because of their price, each one of them had some kind of other contextual piece that made me not want to do it. And I ultimately landed.
Well, I think the case for a guy like Dak, and I know we'll move into the guys that we wrote up. The case here is that you're paying more, but you're getting safety that's not totally on the same level as some of the other names that we're going to mention later. I know Dak had the terrible game against Washington, but other than that, he's been pretty well a lock for 23 fantasy points a game. And I think if you thought you were going to get that from him here against Atlanta, which I think is fairly reasonable, I think you still could include him. And I wouldn't be shocked if, if Zeke didn't play, if props came out, that if he were still in that rotation of guys we were discussing seriously on Sunday morning.
Yeah, I agree with that. And he was the one guy of the group that I thought about writing up and didn't. Just because I think that the other two guys that I mentioned, Breeze and Brady, they are completely off the list.
Breeze and Brace.
I think you're correct on Dak. And that probably could have gotten there with a write-up on him and ultimately didn't. I landed on Stafford. He's $8,200. He has a fantastic matchup against the Browns. How much do you factor in that the Lions – the reason I like Stafford is specifically because they can't do this other thing, which is run the ball at all. They're big favorites, and we don't typically go with quarterbacks in this range, but does it help you on Stafford that they just have struggled? They're just completely awful on the ground.
Yeah, there are two things I like about Stafford here. I mean, I think the first is, as you pointed out, if they're going to crush Cleveland here, and Vegas seems to think they will, it's only because of the passing game, right? I mean, what else? How else are they going to acquire their points? By Amir Abdullah's 2 yards per carry and fumbling on 10% of his possessions? Like, that's not going to get the job done. So I think you will see Stafford prominently featured here. I love how Jones and Tate are playing right now. Both of those guys are cash game plays for me too. I don't know if you happen to write them up later. I haven't gotten there yet. I don't want to spoil it for myself. It's, you know, I want to savor it kind of like I'm doing with Stranger Things as well. I'm savoring it, Doug. How dare you not? I look forward to your article every week, as you know, hanging on every word. But yeah, Stafford, I think one of the things I like about him in this particular matchup is Stafford tends to play at his worst when he's getting pressured heavily by the opposing defense, and Cleveland's not really in a position to pressure him very much. He is the type of guy that will make mistakes, especially, you know, in harrowing situations, especially as the volume of the game gets turned up, as the intensity grows. And this game doesn't rate to be that way. It's going to be a lot more free will and back to his Georgia Tech days, Doug, just passing the guys, connecting with people and all those kind of things. So, yeah, I like Stafford here, I think. And I think I might like him enough to consider him for cash games.
Yeah, the Detroit right now ranks 30th in terms of yards per carry at 3.2 and 29th in just an overall rushing yard. They just can't run the ball. Now, look, Cleveland's going to put that to the test because Cleveland has a pretty damn bad defense. And if you're going to be able to run against anybody, this is one of those teams in a situation like this at home, big favorites. It's a testament to how bad. It's really a testament to how bad their run game is that I didn't write up Abdullah, because Abdullah is worse. Right? Like whenever we're looking at cash plays, really the one thing that we're starting to look for first, and our system brings this out, so I'm not like going down the list and looking for it. Our system has a way to factor this in, but is big favorites that gives the running game a boost. It doesn't count. Abdullah thinks the run game is so bad here that it just didn't even get there for him. So, which is even just more of a testament to why I like Stafford. Now, the other guy I have on here is Eli. Okay. Hang with me here for a second. And I actually kind of needed to write like three lines of just like, don't stop reading the article right now, because because I have him on here. The reason I have Eli on here, it's almost threefold. One is price. Some people simply, no matter how many times you explain this to them, you know, they'll say something like, Eli Manning, what are you thinking? I'm like, well, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel assigns these like annoying things called salaries to each of these players, right? Like, and I hate that, like, you have to feel like we just haven't come around to the idea that you have to factor this in somewhere. But some people, I feel like I could write infinity words about this and they simply will not understand. Like, anyway,
I think it's a mental issue. I think what it is like when on your real life football team that you root for, if you have one, the quarterback is the most important guy on the team. And if you have Eli Manning on your team, you are dead. Like, you can't win the championship if he's your quarterback right now. But in DFS, all the players are the same, right? They're all of equal value. And so playing Eli Manning at 6,700 really isn't different than playing Devin Funchess at wide receiver. It just happens that it's the first guy you see on your list, and it feels bad to start with his name. So I think, yeah, it's a combination of misunderstanding price, but also just the emotional attachment to the quarterback being like the leader of your digital daily fantasy team.
Right, exactly.
I really do think it's like the pitcher too, you know. I think people, it just makes their stomach turn to see that be the first name in their lineup.
It's why I wanted to list quarterbacks last in this line, in this article, and not first, because I just didn't want to lead with them. Now, I think the case for Manning is there though. One is the price. 6,700 is incredibly cheap on FanDuel. He's in, I think, the 5,000s range on DraftKings. Yeah, 5,100. I mean, we were talking, this is as cheap as you're going to ever play a quarterback. Our system has been very, very good at figuring these cheap plays out. This is just a year-over-year thing. It doesn't happen all. And actually, the fact that it doesn't happen every week makes me more encouraged when the times where it does happen, I'm inclined to trust it more. This happened with us with like Tyrod Taylor a couple weeks ago. Deshaun Watson right at the beginning when he was 5,000 on DraftKings before that thing spiked. We were on that ahead of time. And we've been able to pull out these very cheap quarterbacks from time to time. Again, if it was happening every week, then I would be concerned, but it doesn't. Like, there's plenty of weeks where we're going to the Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott route at quarterback. But that's not the case this week. And Eli, 5,100 on DraftKings, 6,700 on FanDuel, very cheap. Great matchup against a very fast-paced San Francisco team that's bad on defense. Again, Eli fits the mold of Giants also struggle to run the ball, and they've leaned a little bit more on Darkwa in the short term. He's still not an effective – he's not a guy you can grind the entire game out with. And I think between the amount of possessions that the Giants are standing to see, that he does have a couple weapons in Shepard and Ingram now that I think that he trusts enough to kind of rack up some points. He doesn't have to do a ton on this price. And I think that's where I ultimately landed on Manning. I didn't feel great about writing him up, but I also, I think I'm coming close to making peace with the idea of possibly playing him in cash this week.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I mean, I think it's really, you know, even for me, it's hard to wrap my mind around emotionally seeing his name in the top of the lineup. And, you know, since quarterback is, generally speaking, the most consistent position, you definitely take on some additional risk by taking a guy who's not super consistent in the quarterback spot. But I think this is a time where, you know, both for Stafford or Manning, it might be the time to reach. I'm not totally sold. Like I said, I'm going to reevaluate on Dak as we lead into Sunday, as we see player props on all these guys and so on, see how line movement happens, see whether Ezekiel Elliott's playing. There's still a lot of outstanding information before we make our decisions here. But as of right now, I think I could, you know, based on the case you've made for it here, I think I could consider playing one of these cheaper guys. I do want to offer one correction. I said Matthew Stafford, Georgia Tech. He, of course, went to Georgia. Go Dogs, sick 'em, woof. That would be the all I want to say to my Dogs fan out there who are upset and been stewing this whole time, and you've probably already tuned out. But I know the Dogs and I know Stafford, and I'm sorry about that.
All right, let's get into some running backs here. And I think that I'm with you that the quarterback position is probably where I'm least comfortable. I'm also I'm comfortable at running back, though. I think the decisions are much different in the sense that we have, I think, a lot of really good plays at running back. I struggled. I had the opposite problem at running back, where I almost couldn't boil it down into just a few guys that I thought were just in good spots. I think the first guy is going to be complete chalk is Le'Veon Bell. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time talking about why. he's just on a completely different level in terms of like what you're getting out of him in terms of his usage and his carries and just the way they're using him. I wrote in the article, he's got 22 more carries than the next closest guy in Zeke, and 37 more, excuse me, total touches, 37 more than the third guy in Gurley. Like, he has a whole game and a half more touches than an elite guy. Like, forget the guys in the middle tier, right? Like, these are like 37 touches is completely elite. So, I mean, do you think Bell, do you suspect he's just the highest owned running back on the slate and we just kind of move on? Or do you think people can talk themselves into fading him? Like, I can't imagine that's the case, but there's something I'm not seeing.
Yeah. Oftentimes with Bell, you need a reason not to play him. And Indianapolis just doesn't represent anything close to that. They're terrible in all facets of the game defensively and, you know, running the ball in particular. So yeah, I think Bell is going to be utter chalk this week. He's involved in both the passing and the running game. So even if this does somehow get out of hand, I think you'll still see him prominently involved. It's hard to imagine there being a better payoff option. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to play like Gurley, for instance, at a similar price tier over tackling Bell here. So yeah, I think I'm thrilled to play Bell, and I'm actually just intrigued to see what percentage of people find better places to spend up elsewhere. I can't picture doing that for cash on any stretch.
Yeah, and I think Gurley's in a great spot too, so don't get me wrong. I just don't think that, right, when you compare them at their price points, you just don't. There's really that's where the comparison kind of stops, right? Like, Gurley, huge favorite at home. I didn't write him up, but it was mostly because I just saw him as being
too expensive. Gurley signed at 18 touches last week, though. You know what I mean? Like,
that's correct. But that game was completely over in the fourth quarter. I mean, they were winning like 51-10. In general, Gurley is an elite touch guy. I think that was sort of an outlier game. It doesn't
16 touches 3 weeks ago against Seattle. Like, I just feel like if you're comparing the two, Gurley is great, and he's a great fantasy player. There's no question about it. I just think you can't compare them at the same price tier, almost regardless of the matchup. At least that's how I feel about it right now.
Completely agree. I don't think you compare anyone to Bell. I think he's in a tier all by himself. I think he'll be the highest owned player. I think this is exactly the place where you want to spend, at least in cash games. Big favorite against Indy inside. It really just has it's everything except being at home. And I'm sure in this scenario, it kind of doesn't matter, coming off the bye as well. So like an extra week of rest, every single box is basically checked for Bell. Now the question is really after him, where to go. One of the reasons that I think playing a cheap quarterback, this is also one of the reasons playing a cheap quarterback, I think, is in the cards this week, is that there are multiple big money running backs that I think you can talk yourself into here. I wrote up Fournette and Zeke together because I think they represented just two pieces of little question marks around them. The question marks are clearly different from each other. One is, we're going to find out maybe this morning if Zeke is if he's had that suspension, if he's going to have to start serving that suspension or not. They're supposed to meet this morning. So maybe even by the time you listen to this podcast, that has been resolved. If he plays, I think he's in a great spot. And I think you can really strongly consider playing him. Fournette's question mark is, I mean, how big of a question mark is this, right? He gets scratched or, you know,
for breaking the rules.
An hour before game time, we find out that this never happens in the NFL, right? Like this, or very rarely happens. And when it does happen, it doesn't happen to the Leonard Fournette types of the world, right?
Like seems to me is that they're probably really, it wasn't that he showed up late to one team meeting. It's probably that they're really frustrated with him in general. And he's probably walking around like he owns the place because he's having a good rookie season. And they were trying to send a message like, just stop it. That's all the impression that I got. I have no news on that, no sources or anything like that, but that's my general feeling. Typically that tends to work when you do it once. But if they get annoyed enough, it might have other ramifications. The issue is that the guys who have backed him up are just bad. Yeldon and Ivory, they're just both bad at running the ball. And Fournette is so good that it's really hard to imagine them continuing to test their mettle in that way. You know, it seems like there's not a lot of teams willing to put their wins and losses at jeopardy like that.
The fact that they did it though is what makes Fournette a question mark for me, yeah, right? Like, because again, it doesn't happen. And the fact that they did it and they still won, like now you hope that sends the message, right? But if you are willing to bench a guy who, I mean, we can call him a top four in the NFL running back. And
certainly for fantasy purposes, no doubt.
He might even be better. That if you're willing to bench this guy and not play him, that means you're willing to kind of do anything with a guy if the attitude is not correct. And that is the only thing that gives me a little pause. Now, up until this point, we had no reason to suspect there was anything wrong. Little injury issues here and there, and they were good about reporting that and having him sit out. But again, I can't really stress enough that this kind of thing doesn't happen in the NFL, right? This is not the NBA where you just get random late scratches, or you just get, you know, a guy's got the NBA flu and he just doesn't play that night. Guys, teams do not bench their best players for violation of team rules, usually because they just find some reason to work it out or for some reason to sure. explain away the fact that they want to play the guy. The fact that they did it does put just that little shade of doubt over a guy like Fournette, and I still think he's a great play this week. So I think you'd be totally fine pairing either one of these guys if they were both full goes with Zeke. I'm feeling pretty good about it because they are in the elite touches, and I just caveat that by saying I think there's just enough of a question mark. The one guy I'm actually most interested to get your opinion on is, I wrote Christian McCaffrey. He's a guy I think that I always wish I knew what the ownership percentages were going to be before a game started, obviously. But he's one I think that people will both simultaneously want to play and talk themselves out of. And I'm dying to know what the ownership percentage on McCaffrey is going to be. At 6,400, he took over the snaps, the lion share snaps over Stewart last week. Do you think at this price he's safe enough, even after a one-game sample of him being sort of the lead back in Carolina?
Absolutely. This reminds me a lot of when we see in basketball a guy coming off the bench and moving into the starting role who is already sort of producing in the bench role, and how great of a punt play that represents. Now, McCaffrey's not as cheap as some conventional punts, again, because he has had some opportunity. But the fact that he went from basically just only being the third down back and catching passes to going out there and getting 15 carries, including a rushing touchdown, that's a tremendous sign for his value. I mean, we were kicking around the idea of potentially playing him as just a high floor option just based on the passing opportunities, you know. So the fact that he went out there and had 15 carries is very reassuring to me. Carolina's really been looking for, you know, a dynamic playmaker in that role. Stewart doesn't represent that at this point in his career. Obviously, D'Angelo's gone. So it's on Christian McCaffrey now. And I think they have enough invested in him to where they would like to, you know, have him be successful, to appease the fans, you know, make themselves look smart in decision-making and that kind of thing. And the fact that he was reasonably effective, 4.5 yards a carry against Atlanta with the touchdown, leads me to believe that there's more fire than smoke there. So this week coming up with a matchup against Miami, you know, it's not a good matchup per se. Miami in the bottom seven teams in the league in terms of yards allowed this season. Some of that's been due to game script considerations. I will say that just the price here, like, I like him a lot more than the other running backs in his price tier. So I think if you take all that together, then he just looks, you know, it's kind of like the sum of the parts are greater than the whole on McCaffrey. The cheap price, the high floor thanks to the receptions, you know, the increased running opportunity, medium matchup with Miami. If I take all that up together and I take the price savings, and especially if I want to pay up for Bell and maybe Antonio Brown, or elsewhere, then I think he just winds up being a guy that makes a lot of sense as a guy to fill out your lineup.
Yep. And they're the Monday night game. And I knew that when I wrote it up, because I don't usually look for reasons to play the Thursday slate, but this is one of them. And ultimately this is kind of where I also landed on McCaffrey, is that you're going to play him and going into Thursday, meaning tonight. And also, I mean, in the later games too. And I think that I agree, the representative value on him. Usually we don't think about like the Thursday slate as whether or not we want to play the Thursday game, but the new makeup of the way DFS is structured is that we're also wondering if like the Monday night game is worth it for a guy, and McCaffrey is that guy to me. So, yeah, the Monday night.
We'll just look at a heads up in his price tier, right? You got Adrian Peterson, question marks about the opportunity going up against Seattle on short rest. You have Amir Abdullah going against Cleveland, who incidentally has been one of the tougher run defenses this season. I mean, 2.7 yards allowed per carry up against a guy who's one of the lowest yards per carry running backs. You can't play him. Joe Mixon, you know, who knows what the opportunity there. Doug Martin, tough matchup, weird opportunity. The running backs in this tier are really bad right now. This type of thing comes and goes, but McCaffrey, for my money, is so much safer than all those other guys. So I'd be very pleased to run him out there. And, I wouldn't think too hard about it actually on a Thursday to Monday. I think it's just a good play.
Final guy I have is Jordan Howard. And I kind of led this one by saying, if you knew at the beginning of the season, if you knew that heard that the Bears were going to be -4.5 favorites against the Green Bay Packers going into week 10, you would have been scared for Aaron Rodgers' life. Like something clearly has happened to Rodgers, and that has
and something else.
and something has. They're favorites here. Howard is closing in on that elite kind of group of guys, and he's actually interesting because unlike some of the other guys, his carries kind of stay around even if they're losing, because they have no plans to pass. Like, they do not want to pass the ball with Trubisky at all. And so even if they're losing games, he still kind of gets his touches. 7,200, mm-hmm. 6,100 on DK, where they use him in the passing game. Do you think we could forego the Fournette Elliott types of the world and pair? I'm just assuming we're playing Bell. So do you think we could forego some of those other guys and just pair Howard with Bell here and feel kind of good about it?
I don't mind Howard for sure. The passing opportunities kind of come and go for him. He did have the 5 targets last week, 0 the week before that, 1, and then 0 in the 3 weeks prior to that. So, you know, not totally the targets out of the passing game that I'd like to see out of my second running back on DraftKings. But a lot of these matchups he's had recently have been very, very tough matchups. Like, you know, you open up his FanDuel card the way I have, you see a lot of red in the matchups: Carolina, Baltimore, Minnesota, Pittsburgh. Like, he's had some really tough ones. So, you know, kind of getting out of that, going up against a Green Bay team that ranks 26th against the run this season. And, you know, he wasn't super against them. He did punch in a touchdown. But with Howard, I think that we do know the opportunity is going to be there. And if you compare him in the same way that I compared McCaffrey, if you just look at opportunity compared to the guys in his price range, like Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, even Mark Ingram, Chris Thompson, you know, of that group, he's clearly the safest in my mind. So if that's how the prices work out, then he's a guy I would be totally comfortable with. I actually think he's run bad in terms of touchdowns here too. And going up against a Green Bay team that doesn't mount much of an offensive threat either, can't really control the ball, I think he'll have even more opportunities than usual.
Yeah, just a couple guys that he's ahead of on the targets or rushing attempts plus targets list. He has more than Melvin Gordon per game. He has more than Kareem Hunt per game. More than Mark Ingram. I mean, but now we're getting into a lower level. I mean, just the fact that he has more, I don't think anyone would have really predicted or would know that he's touching the ball more than Gordon and Hunt. Now, those guys are in slightly better offenses, of course. I mean, significantly better offense when it comes to Hunt. But the fact that he's even in this class, like, he's right up there with LeSean McCoy, and he's actually just behind Fournette. So I think that there's probably some misunderstanding about what the Bears are doing with Howard, and they just are using him a lot, and he's just priced way less than those other guys. And that's kind of where I land on him. I like that they're slight favorites. They're up to actually 5. Actually, that line has moved. They're actually up to 5.5 now. So it started at 4.5, and it's moving just in the Bears direction. The fact that it's kind of just shocking that they're 5.5 favorites against Green Bay, even without the quarterback play. But yeah, I really like Howard here. I think that he could represent the way to sort of save and be able to pay a little bit more a quarterback this week and feel okay about it. If you're never feels good fading a group of guys like Elliott, Fournette, Gurley, like in a main slate. But I think I'm kind of talking myself. I've talked myself pretty much into it with Howard. Moving into wide receiver. Actually, before we go into wide receiver, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about draftboard.com. Draftboard's a new sponsor over here at DFSR, and they're doing something really different than a lot of other DFS sites out there. They're offering the salary cap games that you're used to, but they're really putting an emphasis on transparent and fair play. So like when you put in a head-to-head contest on Draftboard, for instance, all of those head-to-heads are just mixed and distributed randomly. So, you know, the sharks out there tracking who's doing well and who aren't, you know, they can't come in and just target you based on your performance in the past. Draftboard also will give you a free dollar to play. You just go over there, you can get cracking. And if you have the best overall performance of the season, you can win $10,000. And somebody won that just last weekend. So head on over to Draftboard. You can use promo code DFSR to get started. And yeah, check them out. I do believe in them. I knew their founder personally from the poker days, and I do think that they're trustworthy and trying to make a serious dent in the DFS landscape. So check out draftboard.com and tell them we sent you.
Antonio Brown let him off at wide receiver. He kind of fits the Le'Veon Bell category of, I just don't see any reason to not play him. The matchup's good. The matchups against Indy is good. They are so concentrated on offense in terms, I know Juju Smith-Schuster had the huge breakoff run last game, and maybe they're going to work in Martavis Bryant. These things seem to kind of come and go more than they come in terms of where the Steelers line up and where they want to just kind of play their guys. It really is the Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown show through and through. Do you think just stacking Bell and Brown, you're paying top dollar for it, but do you think that is just a plus way to go, and you're just going to live with you know that you're going to get a high concentration of the team's points just out of those two guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll get basically all of the points. You know, I'm not too worried about old Juju there. Juju had a big game coming out last time around. A lot of that was due to Antonio Brown's matchup with Slay in Detroit. I don't think that's going to replicate itself this week whatsoever. I do think we see Brown going back to being what he's always been, which is the most targeted wide receiver in the NFL. So take him together, take him with Bell. It's a path that's worked out in the past. I think basically you'll get a huge lion's share of the touchdowns for a team that's projected to score some of the most points for this week. So yeah, I don't need to be talked into Brown really on either site, although it'll be tougher to afford both of them on DraftKings. I think on FanDuel, the savings are there, and the way the lineups are shaking out now, you can play both. I think with a gun to my head, if I had to only pick one big money guy, I would probably pick Bell, but I like Brown plenty too.
It looks like he's going to line up more against Vontae Davis this week, who, according to the Pro Football Focus grading system, is a very low cornerback grade. Rashawn Melvin in the other slot or the other side of the field has a pretty high grade, but that doesn't, they don't shadow cover anybody in Indianapolis, or they haven't so far at all this year. So you're not really worried about that. And the Steelers are very good about just line. Brown's so versatile that they kind of run him around to so many different spots on the field just in terms of the sets, that they are able to get him out. Typically get him out of bad matchup or get him into the better matchups when he's not receiving shadow coverage, and it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. So I do think that spending up here on him is kind of just the way to go. I also wrote up Julio Jones. I mostly did this on price. Now he's down to 8,000. He's coming off a game where the targets kind of seem to be ticking back into the place where you want Julio Jones's targets to go. It'd be really hard to think about. You're really going to struggle to roster a Bell, another expensive running back, a Brown, and a Julio Jones altogether. He more represented a way, if you wanted to pivot off Brown and still have some floor at wide receiver. I feel like I'm starting to trust the targets coming back, 12 targets last week. Do you feel the same way about Jones, or do you still kind of not feeling great about just the lack of fantasy production he's put up relative to what we thought he was going to do in the preseason?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a little gun shy based on the consistency, but the price point for Jones is pretty reasonable right now. You know, people were playing him at 8,900 and things earlier this season, and I didn't understand that at all. But again, back to the price point, Julio Jones, you know, in the $8,000 price tag category, he appears to be one of the more consistent wide receivers there. I mean, wide receiver has been a wildly inconsistent position all season long. And I mean, it always sort of has been on some level, but this season's really been different. I mean, at running back, we mentioned we have a few guys. We have Bell, Fournette, Elliott. We even have like lesser guys like Howard, who have offered pretty consistent production. And we just don't have that at wide receiver. It's basically been Antonio Brown, and then a rotating cast of dudes who's been terrible. And then at some level below that, you have Julio Jones, who's been hanging in there when the opportunity is right, when he's healthy. I still think he can produce. I think the Dallas matchup represents a pretty solid one. And I think we have evidence that he's rounding back into a 10 plus target a game guy. I think I'm okay playing him on 8,000. It's very close for me though. Like, I think if he were like 8,500, I wouldn't be interested. So that's kind of where my head's at right now.
Yep, exactly. That's exactly where I land. It was mostly just a price. Right. If it was priced, you know, even 500 more, I don't think I would be thinking about it as much. But the fact that the price has dropped and the fact that the price has dropped, but the targets are going back up has me feeling we might be buying on the right side of the graph on him. Last two guys I have at a wide receiver represent probably ways that you can save. The first is Sterling Shepard, very cheap on FanDuel, very not as cheap on DraftKings, though still probably a bargain. $5,700. For a wide receiver on FanDuel that's pretty dirt cheap for a guy that just saw 9 targets. And it stands to reason that this is going to be kind of his target share going forward with it's really only him and Ingram left. They're the last men standing after losing Beckham and losing Marshall to start the season. I completely love the $5,700 price tag against San Francisco this week. Are you with me there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked about him last week. I think he just continues to be a pretty stealthy opportunity guy that kind of hasn't rounded into the big week yet. And I think that's exactly where we want to be. Prices tend not to increase for whatever reason until a guy goes completely off. But 9 targets against Rams, like, I think, you know, I don't recall if you mentioned their DVOA, but the third best passing DVOA this season. I think the matchup is tremendously better against the 49ers. They're simply terrible. And I think Shepard's a guy, I'd be shocked if he weren't like 6,500 by the end of the season, given his current opportunity. And we're just waiting for the breakout week. As soon as he scores any touchdown, he's going to be 6,500. So right now, it's a great, great buying opportunity.
And the other guy was Marvin Jones, only 6,400. Marvin Jones has been, he's been one of the highest targeted guys in football over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Outside of, there's a small group of guys above him. The small list of guys above him, they're in the elite class of wide receiver. I think Jones has been, I mentioned this on the No Halftime podcast, he kind of like snuck up on me in terms of the opportunity because I kept waiting. You know, I've seen the targets trending
up. Snuck up on you? Sounds kind of flirty.
So, ooh, hey, guy, how's it going? I'm sneaking up on you. Oh, hey, buddy. I told you not to grab me like that. I just kept waiting. I've seen the targets trend up, and it was kind of, he's always struck me as this like flash in the pan target guy
like an Amari target guy. Something like that. I've been there exactly. For sure.
That doesn't seem to be the case though. The targets have trended into like, he's getting double digit targets every week, kind of game script independent. Is he a guy you trust in cash games here?
I think so. I mean, we've seen Detroit and Stafford in particular support two wide receivers in the past, basically when Tate used to be the second fiddle. I think they've been waiting for someone like Jones to kind of inherit Calvin Johnson's, not that he's as good as Calvin Johnson, but inherit those sorts of routes so that Tate can do what he's more comfortable with, which is being the possession receiver. I think given that he's been very, very effective in kind of those mid-range to occasional deep balls, I think that we'll see that increased opportunity sustain itself. And I pointed this out in the running back section, but Cleveland's actually been super effective against the run this year. I mean, allowing 2.9 yards per carry, by far the best in the NFL. I mean, by far in the fact of a factor of 0.6 yards per carry. That's kind of nuts. And it's not like teams haven't had an incentive to run against Cleveland, given that Cleveland stinks and they've been down a lot. So if you assume that teams are going to try and pass against Cleveland, even when they're up a little bit, I think that you'll see Detroit doing so. Cleveland is a bottom 10 team in the NFL in terms of yards per attempt allowed through the air. And I think opposing pass defenses are continuing to focus on Golden Tate a little bit more. So I think there's a lot of great positive signs for Jones here. We talk about value, guys increasing price as the season goes along. I would just be startled. I mean, we have one more week of this out of Marvin Jones, I would guess, before the price has to go up dramatically. I mean, if you look at the guys in his price territory, you're talking about people like Robbie Anderson, Sammy Watkins, Larry Fitzgerald with no quarterback. Like Marvin Jones just stands out completely. Like when you look at player props coming out this weekend, I would be shocked if Marvin Jones wasn't more in line with the $7,000 sorts of guys. And the fact that he just scores touchdowns too is just a bonus. I love Marvin Jones. It's almost impossible for me to picture rostering a cash game lineup without him this week on FanDuel.
Yep, I agree. And I think that he's like, if he's a reason you can go maybe like middle, lower tier with guys like Shepard and Jones and feel pretty good about it.
He's a reason to play cash games by himself. I love the play.
Moving and finishing off a tight end, I wrote up Ingram to start. He's been just amazing. He's really profiling more as a wide receiver than he is a tight end. He's entered that class of like that Travis Kelce class of
Zach Ertz kind of.
Ertz group of guys that just is highly targeted, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to go anywhere. Now, the one blemish on his resume is the 0 for 0 for 0 line that he had 4 weeks
ago. I remember it well.
that you never like to see something like that happen. I do. I want to believe, and I truly believe that that is a complete outlier, the way that they're using him, lining him up, running fade routes to him in the end zone. He's a great red zone target for Manning. This is a fantastic matchup. It's just the price. $7,400 is a lot to pay for a tight end, especially if you're paying up across the board. You see the price is just being the only thing inhibiting us from playing him across the board in cash games. We've been on him. Yeah. We played him last week. We've been on him for multiple weeks now.
We've been playing him since he was 5,400. Like, I hate to be the I knew a guy when sort of guy in DFS, but it's actually a big indication. I talked about this last week too, but the fact that our plays continue to grow in price the week after we play them, and in many cases several weeks, it's not always about pinning down a guy on the exact week where they're tremendous. Sometimes you miss, and we missed on Ingram before. But for the most part, we've hit on him. I mean, we played him in each of the last 3 weeks with the huge performances. So I'm a big believer in Ingram. I think the targets are truly elite. I think the Giants, like Detroit, are really looking for someone to be the guy who gobbles up 10 plus targets a game. They really don't have someone like that in their current construction. And I think they believe in Shepard, and I'm a believer in Shepard too, but Ingram just seems to be the focal point of the offense, especially in the red zone. So yeah, I really like Ingram. It's going to be tough to afford it, though. That's my only concern. $7,400. You're talking about typically paying for a premium player, like, you know, when Ingram was getting the sole opportunity in New Orleans, or, you know, I just can't even think of other guys we've played at that price point. It's a very weird price point, I guess, is my point. Doug Baldwin, you know, is a guy. DeAndre Hopkins. There are a lot of guys that are fit in sort of that price tier, at positions where the cheaper guys are worse, that leads me away from playing Ingram. But if you can play Sterling Shepard at 5,700 and take Ingram at 75, and almost like, you know, kind of reverse the salary distribution that you normally would go at tight end and wide receiver, maybe you can pull it off. But I think for my purposes, I'll probably hope to spend a little bit less.
Yeah, I think you play him if you don't play Antonio Brown. I think that, and I don't want to make that decision and I'm going to choose Brown in that thing. But if you're choosing to maybe like spread out your, if you're looking to spread out maybe some of your wide receiver salary a little bit, so it's not as tap heavy with Brown, I think that you take his salary off and then you slot a guy like Ingram and feel pretty good, yeah, about a position that's usually pretty wonky in tight end. I also wrote up Vernon Davis. The one note, and we're going to get out of here in a second here, but the one note on Davis is if this is clearly just Jordan Reed and Niles Paul.
Totally dependent.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's complete, and Reed did practice yesterday. So that is, that's the news we're going to want to monitor going into Sunday. If Reed were to play, you got to take Davis off. And then I think if you do that, you can maybe swap in a guy like Delanie Walker, still coming.
How about Jack Doyle? I mean, Jack Doyle is still pretty cheap. He went 8 catches on 9 targets last week. He gets Pittsburgh, so not an ideal matchup, but he's still pretty cheap. He's sub 6,000. I almost feel like he's the next, the heir apparent to Evan Ingram's underpriced tight end throne. I bet he'll see significant ownership.
Yep. I'll take a look at why maybe he's not coming up.
6,100. You know, so he's a little more expensive.
That's high in the system where he is in targets, because he's actually been, I think he's like the second highest targeted. He was the only guy I think that had more targets than Ingram over the last,
he's been excellent,
few weeks. All right. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. We'll be back again tomorrow doing a full game by game breakdown of every game on Sunday's slate. So go check that out. Also go check out our No Halftime podcast. Go check out our basketball podcast. So many things to listen to.
Rate, podcast for days to
rate and review us on iTunes, and really helps us move up the iTunes charts. All right, buddy, be back again talking more football tomorrow when we do game by game breakdown.
Later, alligator.